Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
We are into hour number two of the program, talking pretty much all Cardinals baseball today. The Cardinals are going to open up a series against the Nationals tomorrow, coming up in about 15 minutes or so. We're going to talk with Ryan Clary. He's part of the team at our sister station, Washington, D.C., 106.7 The Fan, and also host of the Locked On Nationals podcast. So a lot going on with the Nationals. We'll talk with him coming up in just a little while. We are continuing to be here to listen to you and get your thoughts on what is happening right now with this Cardinals team after a pretty tough weekend against Chicago. Losing two out of three, that's not the problem. The issue was what it looked like in the two losses specifically. Let's grab Richard, who's given us a call. Hey, Richard, you're on Sports Open Line.
Yes. My solution to fixing the Cardinals infield and pitching problems is to trade Nolan Gorman to Oakland for Luis Severino. And that gives us, if we go to McGrady, that gives us two new starting pitchers. And I would also like to add that I'm calling from California, and that I've been a Cardinal fan since 1964.
All right, Richard, appreciate the phone call for sure. With all due respect, I don't love that trade. Luis Severino, now admittedly, Severino's bad season that he's having right now is very much connected to the fact that they are playing their home games in a minor league ballpark in Sacramento. You look at his home road splits this year, it is quite different. He has been terrible at home, good on the road, and again, that has a lot. Let's see, his he has a 3.04 ERA away from West Sacramento and a 6.04 ERA in West Sacramento. So that's an argument for Luis Severino. Let me get to my argument against him. He signed a three-year, $67 million deal, so you bring in Severino, and all of a sudden you're on the hook for the final 2 years of that $67 million contract, unless he was to opt out after the 2026 season. And you're doing that for you're giving away a guy in Nolan Gorman, who is currently making less than $1 million, has not yet hit his first year of arbitration, and who you have under contract control through 2029. I'm not completely adverse to moving on from Nolan Gorman, but based off what we've seen lately, I'm a little bit more encouraged with what he has been able to do. And I'm not convinced that Severino's contract is something that you want to add. And I am also not convinced that Gorman is the guy you want to move on from. Now, I realize I say all that to say this. Gorman's in a really good stretch right now. Very streaky player. He can fall into a not-so-good stretch as well. Speaking of potential trades, Sam sends in a message on the he is watching on YouTube. Says, what do you think about the Cardinals trading for Spencer Strider of the Braves? Just a thought. I like that more because I think Spencer Strider is an incredible player, and he is going to continue to be that. He's coming back from injury, so it's taking a little bit. At the same time, that's a big contract. That's a really big contract. I don't think the Braves want to move on from him. That's probably the most important thing. I don't see why they would do that. They've got this guy locked in through 2029. He's not eligible for free agency until 2030. Signed the six-year, $75 million contract. If there was a scenario where you could bring in a Spencer Strider, yeah, I'll jump in on that. I don't think it's something that is likely to happen because even as the Braves have struggled this year, even with them struggling, they are still, I think, what they would view in as a championship window. And they, even if it doesn't happen for them this year, even making the postseason, they're not going to move on from core members of their team like Strider. And you just worked with Strider going through an injury and getting him back. You want to get the best of him and that contract that you signed him to. Nick sends in a message, says, Matt, the Cardinals have said they won't go out and spend in free agency. So how do they fix pitching with not having a star on the team? Just cross your fingers and hope someone emerges. Nick, with all due respect, I think what you've heard to prompt you to send that message is taken a little bit out of context because the Cardinals are not spending right now. I don't know if the Cardinals are going to spend going into next season. It depends on where they think they're at, and it may depend on what happens this year. If this team goes on a great run and looks good in the final 2 months of the season and gets into the postseason, they may feel like their contending window is opening and they would make some more significant moves this offseason. Maybe that doesn't happen. I don't know. But what I do know is while they took a step back from payroll this year to be able to get their draft and develop business in order, get that store in order, they've never said that they're not eventually going to go back to spending large money. And I believe that by the Cardinals getting player development back humming along, that is going to give them the opportunity to make more impactful signings in free agency. I've said this a million times. I know some people listening have heard me say this, and you know exactly where I'm going, and I'm sorry that I've repeated this over and over and over. But to me, the poster children, and this is nothing against either guy. I like each of these guys, what they did for the team, who they are as individuals, but it's what they represent. The poster children for what has gone wrong with the St. Louis Cardinals organization are Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn. Because you were stuck going and spending $10, $11, $12 million for a 3-starter and a 4-starter, or a 4-starter and a 5-starter, or 2 number 4 starters, like however you want to view them. You went and spent that money on those guys. And they made your team better in the sense that they helped you contend to win games, but they did not make your team better in terms of being a playoff club and being a club that on paper looks like they could make a deep playoff run. So start developing your number 4 starter. And by the way, like we all like lift Michael McGreevy up, and this is not me taking a shot at McGreevy. We all lift Michael McGreevy up as being a savior. He kind of projects out as a 3 or a 4 starter, doesn't get a whole lot of strikeouts, pitches to a lot of contact. He's going to get ground balls. He's going to have some really bad days when he's got some bad batted ball luck. Really struggled last night. I'm excited about Michael McGreevy, don't get me wrong, but let's not lift him up that he's going to get here, he's going to propel this team to the playoffs, and then he's going to be your game one starter. That's not who Michael McGreevy is. Is Michael McGreevy better than what Eric Fetty and Miles Michaelis are giving you right now? Yes, he is. So really, that's all that matters for our conversation right now. But the organization needs to produce the Michael McGreevys of the world who can be at the back end of the rotation, and then you take that hypothetical money that you would spend on a Lance Lynn and a Kyle Gibson, you combine that money together, and you go get an all-star player because you're going to go pay $25 million or $30 million for a guy. And I get the sense, based off some comments that John Mozeliak has made recently, that Cardinals ownership is well aware of where the industry is at right now and the type of money it's going to take to be able to bring in truly impact players. So it's up to the organization to go out and create the system where you are developing a lot of players on your major league roster, but at the same time, you are willing to spend legitimate money to bring in the pieces that help fill up the roster. And I think that's the direction that this team is going. I can't sit here and make a prediction on if it's going to be 2026 or 2027 of when that happens, but I can remember having personal conversations. When they had that press conference last year where they made the big announcement, John Mozeliak was going to have one more year, Heim Bloom was going to take over, I had conversations with people in the organization that were saying part of this thinking is that they are going to be ready to jump back in once this player development thing is back to where it needs to be. And I think it's going to get there under Heim Bloom. We'll take more of your phone calls, text calls, all that sort of stuff. We're not done with that, but we are going to get to a guest. Ryan Clary is going to join us to talk all things Nationals baseball. He's with us next. Don't go anywhere. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
The Chris and Amy Show, weekdays starting at 9 on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Cardinals are off today. They get back at tomorrow night as they are going to welcome in the Washington Nationals to Busch Stadium. Well, of course, we'll have the broadcast for you right here on KMOX. A lot going on with the Washington Nationals going into the series, and to talk through that a little bit, very happy to bring on Ryan Clary. He's part of the team at our sister station, 106.7 The Fan in Washington, D.C., and he's also the host of the Locked On Nationals podcast. You follow him on Twitter at RyanClary11. Ryan, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Of course, I'm doing well. You know, it's been a busy few hours here in D.C., really the last day or so, but yeah, it's been crazy.
What was your level of surprise that they made the decision to move on from manager Dave Martinez along with general manager Mike Rizzo all in one big move yesterday?
So as far as Davey Martinez goes, I was not surprised by that. I think a lot of Nationals fans kind of knew that he was a dead man walking at this point, because the thing with Davey Martinez, about a month ago, he called out the players and, you know, he was asked about whether if the coaching staff were to blame for the 12-game losing streak. And he said, no, we can't play for the players and they have to play better. It's paraphrasing it. So I think at that moment, that's when fans knew he's going to be gone. We all knew that he was not going to be the long-term answer anymore. So that wasn't surprising. Now, Mike Rizzo, on the other hand, Mike Rizzo has been here since 2006. The move and the timing of that move was pretty stunning to this team, because no one really anticipated that he would be fired 1 week before you pick number one overall in the MLB draft. And really, let alone a lot of people didn't really expect the Lerner family, the owners here in town, to move off of him, because he does have a long track record of success. But I'm sure we'll get into it. But if you kind of look deeper into it with Mike Rizzo, there are some real things that you can kind of say, like, yeah, he should have been better, and he definitely could have been better. So I do think people were surprised with Mike Rizzo. But as far as Davey goes, people weren't that surprised. We all knew that it was coming.
All right, so I'm not super familiar with how much, like, autonomy Rizzo gives his staff there in Washington. Getting ready for the number one pick, was this something that Mike Rizzo was going to be the guy really making that decision, or is he somebody who really defers to his, you know, scouting director and allows somebody else to kind of take the lead on that pick? Meaning, could things really change here now that somebody else is going to be in that spot?
I don't believe anything will change, because the Nationals a few years ago, just about 2 years ago, they actually plucked Brad Ciolek, who ran the draft for the Baltimore Orioles. And he's kind of been the guy who has run the draft for the team, really just the past season. And as far as I know, I think he is the guy running the draft for this season as well. And we saw them actually kind of have a new way of things. Mike Rizzo in the past, he has run the draft. He's always taken the best player available. He's never kind of cut those deals for guys inside the top 10. And lo and behold, the first draft that Brad Ciolek runs last year, he actually cut a deal with someone at number 10. They took a lesser value there than they would have really done in years past. So I don't really think it really changes things as far as the MLB draft goes. And you know, you watch baseball at this point. They've got the number one pick. I'm sure they're still probably juggling some things. But people inside that building, they probably know who they're going to select right now with that number one overall pick. So I don't really think it changes all too much. And I think this Nationals team, they're going to take the best player available.
There's five or six guys that could go, probably three or four guys that could go number one, and then all of a sudden there's five or six guys that could maybe be available when the Cardinals pick it with the number five spot. So who the Nationals pick number one does have an impact on the Cardinals potentially. Is there some guys who could be picked number one or could potentially fall all the way to number five? Do you have a sense? Do you have a feeling of who it's going to be for the Nationals?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Ethan Holliday. I mean, you guys are very familiar with the Holliday family there in St. Louis. I think Ethan Holliday is the tip-top player in this draft. Like, if you talk about ceilings, he has that 30 home run potential in him. He could stick over at shortstop, likely goes over to third base, or really who knows. He's in high school at this point. But I think it's going to be Ethan Holliday, and I think yesterday it just kind of made it more sure of myself that they are going to take the potential best player in this draft. Like, yeah, there's a lot of risk taking a prep high school bat, but at this point, they're changing things up. They're going in on this rebuild yet again. You got to go and try and get the best player available. You can't pick inside the top 10 in next year's draft as far as the new MLB lottery rules go. So this is your one chance to really get in here and take that best player available. And I think it's Ethan Holliday at this point, and I think that should be the pick for this Nationals team.
Martinez led this team to a World Series not that long ago. I know you're judged by what's going on in the moment, and you made the great point about the comments they made a month ago or so, but are you at all surprised that they didn't find a way to honor him more in him walking out the door, if that makes sense?
Yeah, no, it definitely makes sense. And listen, I think Davey Martinez, unless he lands somewhere else, I think next year is kind of the time, maybe next year, the next few seasons, you have him come in and you retire the number 4 jersey, because again, this guy is going to be remembered as the guy who won us a World Series. We have not seen a World Series title since the 1920s with the Senators. I mean, this town was just starving for a World Series title, and he was the guy who helped deliver it here. So, I mean, is it a little surprising the way that they did it after getting swept by the Red Sox? I mean, maybe the timing was a little bit weird because, again, they lost 12 straight games. They almost got swept in a 4-game series against the Rockies at home, and they didn't even make that decision then. So, I mean, it's a business decision at the end of the day. I think Davey Martinez lost the clubhouse a little bit. There were some anonymous reports out there from players saying that they were pissed about his comments just made a few weeks ago. And this team, really since then, they've completely fallen apart. So I think as far as your young talent goes, you have to put those guys first. And if Davey Martinez lost guys like James Wood and Mackenzie Gore and C.J. Abrams, your really big young core here in town, then you got to move off him. And so I think they made the right decision overall.
We're talking with Ryan Clary from 106.7 The Fan and also the Locked On Nationals podcast. It's been announced that a former Cardinal in Miguel Cairo is going to take over in the interim. This is the second time he's done this in his career. He was the interim manager for the White Sox after Tony La Russa stepped away. So another kind of Cardinal connection right there. Sometimes we see these bumps when interim managers take over. What's your expectation? Is Cairo a guy who the players are going to like playing for?
You know, I think as far as like all the interactions that I've had with Miguel Cairo and really everyone on that coaching staff, like the players love them. And the players did love Davey Martinez. And I think Cairo is kind of goes hand in hand with Davey in that aspect. I mean, he's a nice guy. He's played the game before, being a former player. He's been in that interim manager role there, taking over for Tony La Russa back in, 2021 at that point. Like, he's been around the game. He knows it. I don't think people are expecting this team to do a complete 180. I don't think Miguel Cairo is going to be the long answer, but his job at this point is to keep these young guys and keep this team in check and overall just play better baseball and make sure that these guys take the steps up. And, again, we've talked a lot about the young core here in town. Those are the guys that you really have to focus on, because this season is a lost cause at this point. You've got the second worst record in the National League. We're not expecting a 2011 Cardinals run where they went on a crazy ride in the second half there. No one's expecting that at this point. So keep the guys in check. Try to win some games when you can and beat the teams that you should, and I think he'll be just fine.
This downturn isn't new this year. When do you see the competitive window starting to reopen once again for the Nationals?
You know, I think the competitive window will probably take another 2 seasons. I mean, it really kind of depends what you do with that number 1 overall pick this Sunday night. Like, if you take Ethan Holliday and this guy is going to be a superstar, then I think that that's going to help you a lot. You've also got another stud blue chip prospect like a Travis Acora. You guys may not have heard too much about him, but this guy has put up insane video game like numbers, kind of similar to what Paul Skeens did. He's down in AA at this point. We still don't really know when exactly he'll make that push to the major leagues, but he just got promoted. And the Nationals, again, they've got to hit on their draft picks. That was kind of the downfall of Mike Rizzo. And over the years, he simply has not been able to draft and develop. And if they can do that, even if it's just a few guys, spend nicely in free agency and get a few key veteran pieces, I think this team could potentially win in 2027.
Talked about the legacy of Dave Martinez. Is the legacy of Mike Rizzo somewhat the same, or is it different for him?
Oh, I think Mike Rizzo's legacy here, I mean, he is Nationals baseball, quite literally. I mean, Mike Rizzo has been here since 2006. The inaugural season was 2005, and really, Mike Rizzo gets all the credit for the 2010s. I mean, he stood on the table to make that Max Scherzer deal back in 2015. Everyone called him crazy. They said he was nuts for it. Lo and behold, a couple Cy Youngs later, a World Series championship later, a Game 7 start in the World Series to ultimately help this team win it. I mean, he is a legend here in D.C. People are going to remember him as such, but still, again, the results these past few seasons, they have not been enough. I don't think people are going to remember him for that. I think they're going to remember him for the incredible 2010s run that this team had, really building a winning culture within this building that really we did not have here in D.C. We had the Washington Capitals. You had the Washington Redskins at the time. They were awful. The Wizards have been awful forever. And so the Nationals were kind of like our crown jewel here in town where you could say this team's going to win. They've got Bryce Harper. They've got all this young talent in that really decade span where you were winning consistently. He's going to have a huge legacy here. He's going to be recognized as one of the greats to really just be here in D.C. sports. And he's going to be a D.C. sports Hall of Famer, and he deserves it.
For Nationals fans, is there more excitement about this representing a new era of this team as things have been bad lately? Or has there been more sadness or, you know, people lamenting the fact that two larger-than-life figures in the history of this organization are no longer part of it?
You know, I think they're kind of spinning two plates at once. Like, I think we were all recognizing that this is the end of the World Series kind of run. I mean, we've been holding on to that forever. It's been a bad 6 years ever since they won the World Series. But on the other hand, they are excited for it because we've heard the same messages. I mean, again, you guys in St. you may not know this, but Davey Martinez every day, the Nationals lose 6-2, and he's like, we just have to go 1-0 every day. When you hear that 5 years in a row, when this is one of the worst teams in all of baseball, you're just like, oh my gosh, like this message is not getting to the players. It's certainly not getting to the fan base. So, and even then with Mike Rizzo, like he kind of says the same things. Like he's like, well, we're going to be better next year. Like we're going to be better next year. Once you say that year after year after year, and you fall short every single season, it starts to wear on you a little bit. And I think of the fan base, they're ready for a new beginning. And I think they should be. Like, again, this is a big time for the Nationals. You're in the middle of this rebuild, and you've got some young talent. You've got a great young star with James Wood here in town. You're going to have to open up a window of possibilities here, and you have to start seeing results from guys who simply have not been getting it done, like Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez. So they made a decision, and I think they made the right one.
So it's going to be somebody else at the trade deadline. We would assume that there's going to be some selling off for the Nationals. Which are there a few key players that you feel like are going to maybe be able to help this team in the future if they're able to sell them off this year?
Well, as far as like veteran pieces for the Nationals to sell off, is that where you're at?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so right now I look at closer Kyle Finnegan. He was an all-star last season. He's been great so far this season. I certainly expect them to sell him off at this year's deadline because, again, mid-30s, is he really going to be a part of this future? Probably not. And honestly, his value is never going to be as high as what it is right now. I think he's really good. I think his numbers are a lot better than what his stuff is actually. So I think Kyle Finnegan is certainly someone who will be moved off the deadline. Then I also look at first baseman Nathaniel Lowe. The Nationals made a really great trade this offseason for him. They traded Robert Garcia. I mean, he's good with the Rangers, but still, I'll take an everyday first baseman who's got a little pop, is fine off defensively also. I'll take that trade any day, but I could also see them kind of move him off him. And if you can get some value for him, then certainly if that helps this team win now, and if it helps this team win more in the future, I think you have to get that done. So I'm looking at Kyle Finnegan and Nathaniel Lowe.
Great stuff from Ryan Clary. He's part of the team at our sister station in our nation's capital, 106.7 The Fan. He is also the host of the Locked On Nationals podcast. You can find all of his details on social media, on Twitter, at Ryan Clary 11. Ryan, thanks for taking the time. Really appreciate this, and hopefully we can catch up again down the line.
Of course. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Very good. That's Ryan Clary joining us, talking a little bit through the Washington Nationals, who the Cardinals are going to meet up against for a three-game series that will begin tomorrow. Of course, we'll have the broadcast for you right here on KMOX. 6:45 first pitch, meaning our coverage will begin at 5:50. Really, our coverage will begin with Redbird Rush Hour at 5 o'clock, and then I'll jump in. I'll continue on with pregame at 5:50 tomorrow. The pitching matchup in tomorrow's game, Andre Pallante is going to go for the Cardinals, and for the Washington Nationals tomorrow, they're going to go with Jake Irvin. Irvin, a right-hander who comes in with a pretty good 7-3 record, but a 4.71 ERA. All right, we will jump back into your thoughts on the Cardinals. Again, if you want to get in here, the opportunity to do so by calling, texting, tweeting, or leaving a message in the video chat for those of you who are watching on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. If you call or text, the phone number, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. Tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air, like I mentioned, just leave the chat there in the video chat, and we will definitely get to more messages. Have a bunch that have come in that we not gotten to yet, so we'll continue on with that in just a moment here on KMOX.
Cards manager Ollie Marmol joins the Gas House Gang every Tuesday at noon. Sponsored by Siteman Cancer Center on the voice of the Cardinals, 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Back at it on a Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. We are taking you until 8 o'clock tonight. Again, if you want to chime in, you can do so, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call or text. Tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, or you can leave a message in the video chat. I always say this. I try. I'm not always effective at it. I try not to tell you or anybody else how to be a fan. That's your thing. And if you want to make decisions, go to in terms of how you're a fan, don't want to spend money, don't want to go, do like whatever. That's your right. And I try my darndest. I'm not always successful. Try my darndest not to tell you how to be a fan. That being said, here I go, right? I was a little frustrated with something. Because Cardinals, for the most, again, let's, for all the negative talk, and the negative talk is rightly deserved. In their two losses to the Cubs, they gave up 22 runs. They've been shut out four times in their last six games, seven games, whatever the exact number is. So everything that we're saying about this team right now and the struggles that they are currently dealing with, they are all valid. I'm not running away from any of this. But there is the time to take a step back and still look at where this team is at. And I'm going to pull this card. If you would have been asked when the season got started, if you would be content going into the matchup on July 8th that the Cardinals are five games over 500 and are one game out of the playoff spot, who is saying, no, that's not good enough? Now, there's going to be some people who would say, no, they're not. That's not good enough because they're going to have expectations that the team contends for a championship every single season. I would argue that those expectations are a bit extreme. But if that's your reason for saying that, okay, I will defer to you on that one. But for the most part, the expectations going into this season were not very high, and they have exceeded those expectations. And as they have exceeded those expectations, and the last week and a half, 2 weeks, notwithstanding, they have, for the most part, played a very entertaining brand of baseball. And as that was happening, as this team continued to accumulate wins, as this team did cut down the deficit in the Central, as this team was sitting in a wild card spot, all of a sudden, those loud noises that we heard from people, fire Mo, fire Ollie, I'm never going to spend a dollar on this team. I'm never walking into Busch Stadium as long as those people are around. Those voices started to just get a little quieter. They weren't gone. They weren't. But they started to get a little quieter. Well, then the Cardinals have a bad week. Very bad week. They get shut out in three straight games by the Pittsburgh Pirates. And then they, like I said, they go into Chicago and they lose two out of three. And in the two losses, they just get run absolutely off the field. Guess what's starting to pop up again? All those people who want to puff out their chest and tell you how proud they are of the fact that they're not going to walk into Busch Stadium. And all the people who want to tell you, see, I'm so glad that I haven't spent a dollar on this team this year. Again, this is where I attempt not to tell fans how to be fans. But as someone who loves the game of baseball, and I'm guessing the vast majority of people that I'm speaking to right now also love the game of baseball, it saddens me a little bit that a Cardinals team, again, the last week or so notwithstanding, a team that's been fun to watch, a team that plays hard. And I was going back and forth with somebody on social media the other day, and I made the point that, you know what, this is a team that plays hard. And they made the comment to me, you know what, I'm not going to go spend money on a team because they do the required minimum of playing hard. Okay, yeah, that's fine. Professional, and I gave it to City SC a little bit on social media this weekend because Klaus goes out and says, hey, if we would have played the first half the way we played the second half, we might have won that game. Well, then do it. Play the first game. You know, give the effort. That is the required minimum. Give the flipping effort. So I understand that thought. I understand that thought 100%. But still, the style of baseball that this team plays is something that, for the most part, has been incredibly entertaining. And these guys are playing hard. These guys are working hard. These guys are doing everything that they can be asked to do. And the vast majority of the season has been an incredibly entertaining team. Recently, not entertaining. It hasn't been. Final two games of the Cubs home series, not great. Cleveland series was good. Pirates series, bad. Cubs series, not great. We can go back a little bit further. There's been some other issues, you know, at times during the year. But I hate it. I got to be honest. I hate the fact that there's a group of people that anytime things start to go poorly for this team, they want to yell and shout that they're so proud of themselves that they're not supporting this team. Where my response to them is, if you love baseball, go support this team. Yeah, are there going to be some moments that are clunkers? Are there going to be periods of time that it doesn't look good? Yeah, there are. Young team, not the most talented team in the world. Nobody has ever said that they are. But I've got, well, we can revisit this. We will revisit it. It's not a we can revisit it. It is a we will revisit it. I'm not convinced that this team's going to get back into the division race. The Cubs are better than the Cardinals. I hate the fact that those words just came out of my mouth, but the Cubs are better than the Cardinals. On paper, they are a better team. Maybe something changes. Maybe the Cubs fall back and don't play to their talent. That can happen. The better team, you know, you look at the teams that are around the Cardinals in the wild card race. That's the scary thing about this, because here's on paper, the San Francisco Giants are a better team than the Cardinals. On paper, the San Diego Padres are a better team than the Cardinals. At times, the Cardinals have had a better record than those teams, so the Cardinals are going to have to overachieve, and those teams are going to have to underachieve a little bit for the Cardinals to catch them. But I also don't think that's impossible. I think every year we see teams overachieve and underachieve. The Atlanta Braves are an incredibly talented team. They've got some injuries. They've got some other things going on. There are some reasons for what's happening with them this year. But my God, they're 11. The Atlanta Braves are 11 games under 500. 11 games under 500. And I hope nobody in Atlanta is calling for Brian Snitker to lose his job. Maybe they are. I'm not doing postgame in Atlanta. But the Braves are a very, very talented team that for a multitude of reasons are having a bad season. The Arizona Diamondbacks are a very talented team that for a number of reasons are having a not-so-great season. So it happens where teams underachieve, teams overachieve, things like that. So I'm still of the belief, even with what just happened, I'm still of the belief that this team is certainly worth giving some of your support to if you enjoy watching good baseball. I'm not telling you it was good baseball over the last week or so. It wasn't. We'll take one more break. We'll come back. We can still get some comments in from you. I promise I'll read some of these texts and some other messages that have come in. We've got time for some phone calls as well. 314-436-7900. Wrapping up a Graybar Sports Open Line next on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
Just a few minutes left here on this edition of the program. Got a text message. Says, been a Cardinals fan since 1967 through the thick and thin. But if Oliver Marmol is still the manager after the All-Star break, I'm out. Well, go. I can save you some time. You can jump out now because Oliver Marmol will indeed be the manager of the Cardinals after the All-Star break. And for a team, again, bad week, really bad week, for a team that has overachieved more than most teams in baseball this year, it's pretty remarkable to me that the Oliver Marmol haters to begin the season thought that this was going to be a 72-win season. They are on pace for an above 500 season, yet nobody, God forbid, anybody gives any bit of credit to Oliver Marmol. So to the texter, I'm telling you, Oliver Marmol is going to be the manager at least till the end of this season. So if you are waiting to the All-Star break to see if you're going to hop in or hop out or anything, I can tell you right now, go ahead and hop out, because if that's what you truly believe, well, that's how it's going to go down. Let's talk to Craig, who's giving us a call. Hey, Craig, you are on Sports Open Line.
Thank you. You know, the biggest problem I see with this team, I haven't heard anybody talk about. You know, the pitching staff not included, because they're still pitching pretty much on their every five-day schedule. But the rest of this team, with the crazy schedule of play every team in Major League Baseball, with all the doubleheaders that they've already played, plus the long stretches with no days off, these guys are just gassed. They're out of gas, which we were worried about with the young players towards the end of the season, but this schedule has just gassed them already. I'm curious to see when they come out of the All-Star break, if we don't see a little bit of that pop again after they get a few days rest. But I've not heard anybody contribute their downfall to just being totally out of gas.
Yeah, Craig, I appreciate the phone call. It's a really good point. We've talked about it a little bit. I don't think it's an I think there's a difference between excuses and reasons. But I also don't like this is the highest level of baseball. The Cardinals, the amount of doubleheaders they've already played this year is insane. And has it taken something out of this team? Absolutely. Having the month that they just had with so few off days, and then some of those days turning, you know, even days where you're rained out, you're at the ballpark all day working, and then all of a sudden you're not playing that day, but you've still put your work in, and then you got to play two games the next day. Yeah, I do think this team is gassed. I think this team is a lot more banged up than people are giving them credit for. A lot more banged up. I think there are a lot of dudes that are dealing with stuff and they are gutting it out on an every single night basis. That being said, every team has to deal with the 162 game schedule. It looks different for every single team in the way it goes down. So I don't like talking about it that much personally, because I think it sounds like I'm creating a level of excuse, even though I think to what you said is correct. I think it's more of a reason than an excuse. But you're paid to be a ball player. You're paid to play 162 games, and however the schedule works out and however the games are divvied up and whatever Mother Nature decides she wants to give to you, you got to find a way to handle it. I do think that coming, look, they've got the off day today. They had an off day on Thursday. They'll play six games here at home, and then they'll get 4 days off for the All-Star break. What it looks like on the other side of that is something that is worth taking a look at. Text message from Teresa. Actually, you know what? We won't read that one. I think that one. We will read this, though, from Teresa. Earlier said, just because the Cardinals are going to be playing lesser teams for a short while doesn't mean that those excuses that changes need to be, that the that the changes need to be made. Yeah, so I think that was an alluding to Eric Fetty specifically and Miles Michaelis. And I would say that there are changes that do need to be made, and I think that they are in the process of being made. We have about a minute left in the show. Tom has just given us a call. Tom, I hate to do that. I've got just a few seconds for you, but you're on Sports Open Line.
Real quickly, you know, if it's here's the problem with Mo is he won't admit his mistakes. If he got rid of Fetty and Michaelis, he's not out $20 million. He's already out that $20 million. He's only going to be out the couple hundred thousand it's going to cost to bring these kids up here. So that's the way he's got to look at it. It's going to cost him a couple hundred thousand, not the $20 million. You can't chase bad money.
Yeah,
thank
Tom,
you for letting me tuck in.
You bet. Thank you for the call. I wouldn't move on from Fetty just because I think there's still some upside there. I would get him to the bullpen, let him work on some things, see if there's a chance that you can get him back to where he was previously. There was a reason that he was desired at the deadline last year. So I'm not walking away from Eric Fetty, even if I'm taking him out of the rotation. Miles Michaelis just kind of at this point is what he is. And can you do better? I think you can. I think he can. And I know that Eric Fetty's not going to make his next start. That's been preordained pretty much. What's going to be interesting is what they do with Miles Michaelis moving forward. Thanks for being tuned in. We'll talk to you again coming up tomorrow here on KMOX.